He's asking about the groove to keep it greasy, which is, I get asked that a lot. It's, I recorded it on Joe's Garage, earlier Frank Zappa record. And basically what it is it's kind of like, it's almost like an old fusion groove, like Mahavishnu or something. It's like, it's in 1916, but it's 4/4 3/16. Played it like that because instead of playing it like we wanted it to groove more, so we said hang on 1 second, I have a problem with this pedal here. You know what it is?
It's just a spine gear, yeah. Center
this
blade.
Is not really tight. There we go.
Is there this thing here wasn't moved on. Maybe he has an element. What I was saying is the actual rhythmic pattern of it is in that time signature is this. It's in your head so that you're not really counting that much anymore or at all as much as you are feeling a series of accents. Come on. Did you guys ever hear that song by Michelet, No More Lies?
Yeah.
Anybody ever heard that? Every time I hear that phone ring, I always think, hello.
Hey, baby, you're the only girl for me.
Hello. Phone hangs up and he, hello.
You're all I think about.
Chill out, your nose is grown, Pinocchio.
So just like any other pattern, even if you're playing in 4/4, as soon as John's helping me out a great deal here, so you got to have to bear with us because it's a new pedal and we didn't tighten everything down real well like we should have. You know, just like any pattern, like even like Soul Vaccination, even though that's in 4/4, it's like. So it has. It has a series of accents. So just like 1916 has. So you keep that pulse in your head. Like a clave. So that's when you could start playing around with it and avoiding one, you know. We'll be right back.
that, yeah. Please turn my mic on, thank you very much.
And so, I mean, you could start avoiding one, you know. I would play grooves like that, play in seven, you know. Real basic seven. And then try things like playing on the E, on the last eight of seven, you know. And then playing different, like over the bar line triplets, you know, later. You know, so you have two quintuplets and a triplet. So you have, you know, in seven, if you watch my hi-hat, it'd be like, actually three quintuplets and a triplet. So the quintuplets are 5/2, which encompasses 6 beats, and on the 7th beat you have, okay? And if you notice, the 5/2s, they're pretty close together in speed, so if you...
Start experimenting with avoiding the bar line, and then you can start experimenting with things that happen inside of the bar line that go way over the bar line. And I play, and I don't go for something at the drum set, so that what I hope to happen is that my ears will guide me instead of some text that I learned that I'm trying to find a home for. You know, then what usually happens, I found in my own personal experience, is that you get this lick, practice out of a book, which is designed really to give you an idea of how to break stuff down that already exists for a musical reason. You know what I mean? Stuff that's been documented, that somebody played that was hip, hopefully, that some, you know, that this is how they did that, or this is how this music is to be played. You know, it never came the other way around. It never happened where suddenly some guy started writing drum books and then drummers learned stuff out of the book and then went and played a gig. It's like when music was invented, when rock and roll, you know, somebody started doing this and the guy sat down and played, and they started playing a fiddle, and then some guy invented fusion, and they let their imaginations, the music invented itself. Then it was documented, you know, and the text, and the instructional text was documented to provide people with ways of illustrating how it's done. So, with that philosophy, you know, my whole idea is that rather than try to, I mean, sure, I've gone through books like four-way coordination just to try to, because you fall into habits, you know, like if you play grooves where your right foot always goes with your right hand. So those things cause you to do things where you split it up, you know, but they're not music by themselves. They're just examples, you know, to try to free your brain up. And so what I try to do now is I try to just play, and I'll go for stuff, and if I make a mistake, I really don't care if I make a mistake. Honest to God, I don't care. And if you guys laugh at me, I'd say, hey man, I was going for something. You know, I actually had the guts to go for something that I didn't know. man. It's like he's like my god of drums, okay? All-time hero, okay? And like, you know, I'd see him playing and he'd be going for stuff and maybe he'd go for some flam combination. He might hit a rim. So what? He was going for something. And so I appreciate people who are very technically deft and work stuff out and it's always real clean. And I have a lot of respect for that. And I could do that too because I practiced enough where I could actually, I have enough of a vocabulary that I could sit down and play some lick that I know will work. It's pretty complex. But I try not to think about it when I play, you know? I try to just go, well, for example, you know, I know that I reached the line where I stopped doing certain licks, like if I was gonna play a triplet lick or something, where I know that I could play, you know, like, do that. I can't tell what the sticking is or whatever. So it's great if somebody puts it in a book and you can actually see it and you can go, okay, it's this, you know. Spell out things that you already can hear, then you're on your way to creating your own permutations of that stuff. So basically, I just try to create permutations of stuff that's kind of already in my vocabulary, and I mix it up a lot, and I don't really think about what I'm going to play. I try not to do that. Yeah?
What was it like working with Gino Vannelli?
I worked with Gino Vannelli a long time ago, and what had happened was is after I left Frank Zappa, I had the opportunity to work with Gino Vannelli and a group called Pages, which is now Mr. Mister, at the same time. So I was in this group called Pages with Richard Page and Steve George. And so we did the Gino Vannelli record during the day, and we were doing Pages in the evening. So when I had that opportunity, I left Frank, and because I told him, look, I really think that now I can stay in town and branch out a little bit more. Because, you know, when I get off the road with Frank, I couldn't get a gig. You know, I'd come home for a month and forget it, because I was always on the road. Pardon?
Are you a left-handed drummer also?
No, I'm a right-handed person. And but Gino, I'll tell you about Gino, is he was very demanding, because he was kind of like a drummer himself. And the more fusion-y I played, the better he liked it. So, you know, anything that I could do that resembled like me. Because it was like the 89th take or something. I looked up and here's Gino. No kidding, man. No kidding. Here he is.
I couldn't play. I almost stopped. I was like, I looked over at Neil Steubenhaus, who's a bass player. I looked over at Steubenhaus and he was like, he died, he was crying, you know. I mean, and it was real meticulous. We had one song which had 33 tape edits on the single, because we'd have to do another take, which was perfect.
and we turn around and do another take just to change one note in the fill going into the bridge. Living inside myself.
Yeah.
Pardon? I can't hear you, I'm sorry.
Can you play a little at the beginning?
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's just the basic, you I mean, it's just a real basic R&B groove.
Was that the only album you did with
it? Yeah, it was the only record I ever did with it.
You like David Garibaldi a lot, obviously. Can you break down the beat to Oakland Stroke?
Yeah, let me think about Oakland Stroke. Yeah, I really dig David's playing. I think David is a real underrated guy who was a big innovator for a lot of drummers that really never got the credit that he deserved doing it. I mean, I think he did it among drummers, but it's really amazing the contribution that he made to the drums. Let's see. I have to think about that one for a minute. I used to know that note for note. A lot since I got in. When I got in, there was no Lin machine. I'm not that old, man. Okay. But this was like just to show you how fast MIDI has advanced and stuff. Like there was no Lin machine, like click tracks, 24 tracks was max, and people were still doing demos, publishing demos, songwriting demos with real players. And that just doesn't happen anymore. It just doesn't. People go out and buy a little quarter studio, a drum machine for $250, synthesizer, and bingo. One reverb, and they make the demos at home. And, you know, the important thing is really, there's a lot of factors in being a good studio player, and of course you have to have good time and play with the click so that you can feel good with the click. Not necessarily be a machine, but because perfect time is not necessarily good feeling time, but you know, to be responsible, to be on time, which is something that I'm not always am, and it hurt my career a lot in the beginning because I was always late. And, you know, I wasn't,
there was, that's a little complicated issue, but. Read good. Psychologist. Difficult. I mean, I'll give you an example. I recently got fired off of the date with Christopher Cross. And the reason that happened is because I got called to do the date from an engineer who's a friend of mine. Not really a friend, but someone that I knew that I'd worked with before. He goes, hey, I'm going to do Criss Cross. I want you and Freddie Washington to do it. So we got called for the date. And I've got a Macintosh. I'm kind of into the computer thing. I'm not a real chip head, but I'm into the MIDI thing, right? And it's like, you know, I go in there, and I got my Mac catalog with me. And we're sitting there, me and Freddie are sitting in the studio, and you know, I'm sitting there in between takes, and we were there for like 9 hours, and we were like trying to cut a million tunes in 9 hours. And so we're sitting there, and about 5 hours into it, I whip up my Mac catalog, and I start talking to Chris about it. He's way into it. I find out he's a total Mac kid. We're getting along great, wonderful, talking about Macs. Once or twice I left, I got on the phone, ordered a case. On playback, I left, and I called my wife and said, hi, you know, and I went back in the room. Then I go in and I listen and talk, yeah, that sounds good, you know. Get along great. The next day, I get a call from the producer. Man, you guys are typical LA jaded jerks. What do you think you are? This guy's an artist. Can't you respect the music? You're sitting there, you know, reading a book, you know, and this guy, you know, and they got really sensitive about it and thought that, like, I wasn't into the music at all, and the guy, like, chewed me out for like 10 minutes, really wailed on me, and like, and said, you know, no, man, I'm sorry, you guys forget it, you know, this is really a drag, you're really being a drag, and I'm like, hey, man, I'm sorry, I didn't know we were, like, into it, we were talking and stuff, you know, so I blew it, not knowing that I blew it, because I never got any indication, so there's a subtle thing there, where you really got to read the people, and sure, sometimes you get to the point where you go in and, you know, they see you, you're Joe's studio player. They right away they think, oh, this guy is another date to him. And some people get real sensitive about it. They think, oh, he goes in and, you know, this is his fifth session today, and he doesn't give a heck about any, you know, this doesn't mean anything to him. So that was kind of a tough lesson for me, you know, because it was sounding good. And you know, it's the most important thing. I mean, I know guys, man, who are real good players, but they're great psychologists, and they get over like you can't believe. I mean, we're talking about, hey, man, all the time. They always call the guys up, and it's like, you get a phone call from them. It's like the car dealer who, like, sends you a Christmas card, and you go, yeah, that guy, I went there to look at a car last year, and I didn't buy one, but he put me on his mailing list, you know, or I get these real estate guys that come up to my door, you know, and they put, like, little pitchers or something on the door, like the pour water in. It says Ed Koenig, Park Realty. You know, and after a while, I'm always just Ed Koenig. You know? So there is a psychology to that, and that's a big part of it. You know? Very important, man.
The front of your bass drum looks pretty high. Why is that?
It looks high.
Well, it looks like it's about. It looks like it's about. Looks like it's definitely taken off. There's no reason for that, right?
They just set it up that way.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
What kind of foot pedals do you use, number one? Number two, I wonder if you could elaborate a little bit on your foot technique. It looks like you use a lot of leg involving your foot on your foot.
The reason for that is because I had to do it. It was do or die. Plus, I really liked doing that. It was just part of my makeup. I mean, I enjoyed doing it, and I had to do it. And I got a lot of flack from the other guys in the band for doing that. The percussionist used to hold up a sign that said, where's one? And I would just say, well, man, if you don't know, then you're a sorry case. That's some sad shit if you don't know where it is. But you know what I mean?
I'm sorry. Is that the okay, Vinny, where's five?
Oh, I don't know why he did that. He just kind of went off, you know. Yeah.
Could you demonstrate the two drum fills to pick me up clean with the and the shuffle-like fill? There's like two fills, beginning?
I, honest to God, I don't remember that fill. I don't know. I can't remember the fills I played on those records. But chances are it was probably some kind of double. Sets in a room, and I said, okay, you play this, and you play that. And basically, what we all decided that it should be Steve's group. It should be Steve's famous Mozambique, because he's famous for that, and it has a lot of strength, and it's got a great feel, and that we would all trade fours and trade eights around Steve's thing. That was kind of a unanimous thing, which I think is only normal, deserving of respect to Steve as well. You know, I mean, the guy's a legend, okay? And he was around long before I ever was. So I got, you know, I felt that Dave and I should honor that, you know. And so I partially suggested that. And so we just, you know, got on stage and winged it, you know. And I just called Kathy up, and Kathy called me, Buddy's daughter, and said, well, which tunes you want to play? And I wanted to play this one tune, but Bissonette had already called it. So I found another up-tempo tune that I liked, and found another one, and I just listened to some of the records. And when we got there, they had charts. Got sat down, played the charts a couple times, ran them down before the gig, and played them the next day. But the experience was great, because it wasn't about, well, am I going to make a mistake on this chart, or am I going to do this? It was like, we're playing for Buddy. And we want to collectively put back some of that energy that Buddy gave to all drummers, because he was such an influence on generations of drummers. You can't deny it. And I wanted to use the fill from another take, but we never did splice it, and I was really upset to this day. I didn't want to use that fill. No. I wanted to use another fill, but that was like a set amount of bars. It was basically like kind of like a non-alternated flam drag. You know what a flam drag is? So it's kind of like... Because when I first got in, I did, you know, one of the first, I did this Pat Williams record. Here I was, Tom Scott, you know, Jerry Hay, all these guys, Chuck Finley and Robin Ford, Don Grusin, and you know, I sat down cold, the chart was like 9 pages long. Sure. Made one reading mistake, and I heard the horn players mumbling through the headphones. So I wailed on them. You know, which, you know, and they dug it. So right away, it created a bond. It's like two guys who one guy beats the shit out of each other, and then they're best friends or something. it's like, that's what happened. It was like, I said, yeah, I got your, you know, I don't know what I said to him, but I said something back, and they backed off. Because I thought it was uncalled for, because the tempo was ding, 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 ding. It was like, you know, like this long. I'm like, shut up, man. You know, what are you, perfect? You know? Shut up!
I'm
thinking that.
Can you give us an example of how you approach Latin?
You know, with like a bomb and a bass drum. Here.
playing a 2-3 rumba clave in the left hand, you know. One.
Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very, very much. Thanks. I really appreciate you. You've got a great audience. I'll stick around a little bit. We'll sign some autographs for anything. I'll be glad to talk to you some more. Thanks.
Okay.
All right. What kind of?